Where do we find you today?
I am, Justin will know the area. I'm in Locust Valley right now, sitting in front of a physical therapy. My son's in there getting some physical therapy on his knee, and in Long Island, New York.
Ah, yeah, Justin was very excited. Any ties to Long Island, he gets very excited about, don't you, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's a wonderful place to be. Can't blame me there.
I love it. I love it. Hey, you get sick of hearing all those Anthony Stewart Toronto stories, don't you?
That's hilarious.
So, well, let's start there, Doug. A member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. When you look at these great young players in the game today, and so many of them are American, the Jack Eichels, the Austin Matthews, etc., you know, when you think back to you and Modano and JR and Brett Hall, what role do you think you guys played in getting this next generation of great U.S. players up and running?
I mean, certainly I think the timing of it, you know, 1980 was kind of the spur for all of us athletes in America. I mean, obviously it's a great sporting event in general, but for American hockey, it really fueled us and our generation into just wanting to not only play hockey, but play for your country. And I think having it in 96, you know, 16 years after that, and the fashion we, you know, the team we were able to beat, and the fashion we did it, two games in Montreal, it was a pretty incredible thing. And I think you hear a lot of the young players relate to that year and that tournament as kind of, you know, pushing them towards the same thing we had for 1980. But, you know, I think it was a big thing also was our ability to stay together as, you know, probably 80% of a group in three or four tournaments, you know, 98 Olympics, 96 the World Cup, and in 02, and even in 06. We had a pretty good core of players that were doing some really good things in the league and certainly representing the country. And, you know, I think that helps having the, you know, being able to do it for such a long period of time in a big group. It was really great time for me.
All right, Justin, let the Long Island lovin' begin.
No. I want to go to, you know, it's a bit of a lovin', but I still want to go to the bigger picture of your career, Doug, and just ask you about your, I guess your state as a setup guy more than a goal scorer. Now, you played in a lower scoring era and still scored over 20 goals six times, so I don't want to say that you didn't score goals, but, you know, you look at your assist totals, and man, I mean, you were a dish first guy. I wonder how you came to be predispossessed with that mindset. Was that something that your parents encouraged as a kid, or just the way you always saw the game?
I think I frustrated my parents more than any of them. Certainly my father, who coached me until I was 16. I just always... I don't know. I think I grew up playing against my father's friends in the late night hockey and playing with all his older teams that he coached. I grew up in the city of Detroit, so I couldn't go outside and play. I got home from school and I had to go immediately to the rink outside the city, and he would coach three or four teams. I'd be there till 9 o'clock every night. So I was on the ice with older teams. I just always wanted to, I just love the look of throwing a nice sauce over and having somebody have an empty net and you just kind of rewarding them with a good pass. And I just always played that way. And believe me, until I retired at 40, I'd get a weekly message of, "Will you shoot the damn puck?" from my father. So and most coaches. But, you know, that's just, it was inherent that I always tell my son, on any two-on-one I've ever had, I've never looked at the net once. I don't think... I just always looked at triangles and the position of the skates that were around me so I could get the puck over in the best spot possible for, you know, for a goal. But that's just how I played. I don't know why. Probably could have made a little more money if I shot more, but I'm proud of it. And, you know, it was a great game. I'm just so happy to that I'm hearing rumblings of this game coming back because I miss it.
Stewie.
We'll take it back to Long Island here. How was it playing with John Tavares? You played with him when he was a rookie. How was his evolution as a player from you being his teammate to you actually coaching him a few years later with the Islanders?
Is this the John Tavares from Oakville?
Yes.
Same one.
I know all the hey,
lacrosse.
After,
yeah.
After watching Stewie all year, I know like Etobicoke. I know all these names. All these cities in Toronto. I love the stories. Now, God, it was a great evolution to see Johnny come in and to be there when he was drafted. And I remember taking him to breakfast the first day and before camp and having him live with us and seeing him grow. I mean, you know, you guys talk about the great players a lot, and it's just something about certain human beings. And, you know, I remember this first year he went home and he was leaving my house and packing up, going back to Toronto, and he's like, I will be skating is going to be one of my strongest assets in 16 months or something like that, he said. And I'm like, yeah, all right, have a good flight. And I mean, 2 years later, you know, the first year he's going in the corner with Zdena Chara, and I'm thinking he's gonna get killed. Oh, geez, I'm cringing. And 2 years later, I could care less who he's going in the corner with. Yes, he's not the fastest, but his strength on the puck has become his biggest asset. And in 2 years from being your biggest efficiency, it's pretty incredible. So he's just a great kid. He's focused. I hope I lightened him up a little bit. And try to have a little fun at home and get him involved in the family. But he's a part of our family, and to be his coach, you know, with a guy with such integrity, it really wasn't a hard transition. I knew he would never put himself in any type of situation, either one of us, to take advantage or to be awkward, you know. And the same thing you tell your kids or you tell somebody that, maybe your best player on the team is, I'll probably be the hardest on you. And he knew that going in. And I think, you know, that creates accountability through your team. If you can have great reactions from a little adversity from your stars and those guys on your team that sit around you, and you, they know you get all the ice time and the accolades, but when you come down on them and they react in a good way, it's just good things for your team. And John was just a pleasure to have on it as a teammate and a player on my team as a coach.
We're in conversation with Doug Weight, of course, a great 19-year NHL career, 1,000-plus points, and as well, as Stewie just alluded to, head coach of the New York Islanders for a couple of years as well. In fact, you coached Tavares in his final year and a half with the Islanders. So a two-part question here. How much dialogue did the two of you have about the big decision he had to make as a free agent? And what was your initial reaction when you found out he indeed was leaving the island to go back to his hometown Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, I'll answer the latter first. I think I was surprised. I felt like more and more as we went on that it was more of a chance, but I still didn't think it was coming. And I thought maybe San Jose would have a little edge over Toronto. I never felt like, as much as John loves Toronto and loves the Leafs and grew up a fan, I never felt like he was really, really attracted to that, or maybe he hit it well. You know, I didn't think that was going to be him. You know, a Montreal kid going back to Montreal, a Toronto kid. I thought he was going to chase a situation, which obviously Toronto's a great situation, a great young team, and they made it work. Kudos to them. But yeah, we had a lot of dialogue. I really tried to give him all the information I could, honestly, within our organization, within our building, living, everything about Long Island, and of course I wanted him to stay, but I was, you know, as forthright as I could on both sides, and then I kind of just let him, you know, he had enough people in his ear, and he knew. There was a couple phone calls I got before his decision, and I let him call me, and we spoke about it, but, you know, he puts his work in, so I knew he was going to do what he wanted.
Just a quick follow there. What did he ask you when you said he called you, you know, in the weeks leading up to it?
Oh, what did he ask me? Just things of things that were going through his head about team depth on both teams, about players coming up in all the organizations, you know, like it was just, you know, maybe using me as a soundboard and hearing about what I thought about certain. I think we've watched a lot of hockey over the years. Our minds kind of think alike. So I just think he was probably wanting to maybe back up what he was feeling in certain organizations and teams. But still, I mean, I would never do anything to be a detriment to the Islanders, but I certainly, I was just truthful on all my answers, and I never really prodded him too much on what his decision was going to be.
JP.
Well, I'll step in here. I think he took a nap here. And David, we were supposed to make this about Doug here. We're talking about John Tavares. So I'll apologize
before,
for that.
It's like when you just.
Oh, here he is. Go ahead, Justin.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Can you hear me?
You guys are reminding right. me. You guys are reminding right. me of the.
Sorry, Doug. I don't know if you've ever heard of the jersey
mail I get.
Of the jersey game before.
No.
Justin's got that Long Island connection right now. He's calling.
All right. Well, the jersey game, Doug, is one that.
Okay, I'm going to step up here. I'm going to ask another question here. How was it? You got traded from St. Louis to Carolina and ended up winning the Stanley Cup. How was it coming mid-season, getting to know the guys and winning the Stanley Cup? And how big was Eric Staal's helmet at the time?
Well, first of all, I'm going to go back and say, you're right. This interview, like, it's John Tavares hour. It's like I get the fan mail and it says, Doug, you are my favorite player. Can you please have John Tavares sign this?
Oh, I apologize.
I'm kidding. No, what an experience. I mean, you know, we were struggling in St. Louis, and I was 35 years old on the end of a contract, and we were going to miss the playoffs. So obviously I knew having a no trade, I would probably get some requests from our team, and Larry Plow had brought me in, and, you know, I had three or four teams that I was, I think Ottawa was an extreme interest for me. I think they were a powerhouse that year. They were playing well. They ended up getting eliminated by Buffalo in the first round, I think, in the playoffs. But, you know, Mr. Rutherford called me, and we had a great talk, and I looked at the team, I just really liked their team. I think they were explosive. They seemed to be such a resilient group playing against them throughout the season, and I was just impressed with their. You know, they had the old guard as far as Wesley and Rod was getting up there, and Whitney and Brett Hedekin, who I've known, and then they had that young crew of Justin Williams and Eric Staal, and I mean, just a group of players that I was impressed with. So. Getting there, really an easy transition. I think it's as hard as you make it. You have to go, and not to spread water on my plants here, but, you know, you have to go with the selfless attitude of, you know, wherever you're going to put me in the lineup, I'm going to play hard, whether it's four. I was used to playing 20 minutes, but I played probably 14, 15 minutes, and I was fine with that. I wanted to win, and I wanted to prove early to the players that I was going to be around that I'm here for a reason to help them as much as I can and to just fit into their organization, not become anything bigger than that. And I think, you know, I remember Roddy the first, we were in the weight room, and I don't think he admits to saying this to me, but he gave me praise for about 5 minutes and told me he loved my career and how I play. But, you know, St. Louis is kind of, we were in one. We were known as a selfish group or something at that point in our season. And he said, none of that stuff's going to float here. So if you're going to come and you're going to complain, he just gave it to me right there. And I said, Rod, I'm here to help you win. But it showed me a lot that he had the gusto to do that. And I think I answered the bell for him. But great group of guys, and I loved it. Something I'll never forget.
Doug, sorry about the technical difficulties there. I was going to ask you, I'm not sure if you've heard of the jersey game before, but it's when you picture just a random player in NHL history, Ron Francis, you know, what jersey you picture him wearing. With you, for me, it's a United States jersey. For whatever reason, I think you represented the U.S. in 9 different events, if I'm not mistaken, 3 different Olympic Games. So when you reflect back on your own career, where do you hold those memories in comparison to the NHL ones?
Wow. You know, we were talking about earlier just the length of time that we were able to stick around as a group. So it's up there with, I mean, 96 is as close second to the Stanley Cup in 06 for me as possible. And that's a World Cup. But those guys, I got to play in most of those nine tournaments. I mean, besides the World Junior, I had were probably with that core of guys, you know, in that 10-year period. So it was amazing. We had an amazing group of guys, a really interesting lineup that kind of formed in our U.S. teams. It was almost like it was a drafted, sculpted team instead of, you know, it's tough on Canada when you got 44 All-Stars to pick 20 guys from. We kind of had a team of really great players, don't get me wrong, but it kind of just formulated. We had our checking line with the Dead Marshes and the Otto, and then we had, of course, the Bruiser type of Kachuk and Guerin and Modano, and then me and Hulley and LeClaire were a scoring line. I mean, it was just kind of a sculpted group. So to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I'll say it means as much as just under being an Oiler. I think that was my time where I just got a chance to play and got a lot of responsibility put on me, and I really loved it. And, of course, winning, as brief as it was in Carolina, is important. But being an Olympian and being wearing that jersey, it was I'll never forget walking out of Montreal when we beat them, Canada, in the final two games on a Friday, Saturday night. It was just an incredible feeling. So that's definitely a huge memory.
We got a couple more minutes here with Doug Wade. Doug, real quickly, was there a chip on your guy's shoulder in 96? You know, Canada, the prohibitive favorite on home ice for some of the tournament. And did you guys present it like that? It's almost 1980, us against the world again.
Yeah, I think we definitely did as a group. I think Ronnie Wilson did a great job of fueling us a little bit. And, you know, you're professional, so you talk about bulletin board stuff. And, I mean, come on, everybody, we're going to try to win no matter what. But I do think there was definitely a different attitude coming in the first day. The paper was on the wall of no one can beat this team that Canada's put together, and they had all their stats. But the U.S. has got a team that can at least come close and at least make this interesting. And that was kind of what started it. So, I mean, we just had confidence, though. I think as a group, when you have those guys with swagger, Hulley, guys like Chris Chelios, who they bite through nails to, they either have the confidence to step up and perform. I mean, we just had we had something going on that was, I knew it was going to be close. As I watch a skateboarder go by me with a Canadian hockey jersey on just now.
Love it.
It's Tavares.
It's Tavares. We got one more for Dougie Wade. Stewie, JB, who's on? Whoever wants one, throw one.
I wanted to ask, we both shared an assistant coach in Mike Kitchen, and he's notorious for skating the boys hard. So do you have any Mike Kitchen bag skate stories? And did anyone ever go after him over the years for pushing the guys so hard?
No, we didn't. He was great. He's a great, he's got so much energy. But yeah, I had a couple injuries in St. Louis, so I had to get the, spend some time in the kitchen, as they say. Oh, and I left some things in the garbage after practice, I think, a couple times with him. But no, Mike was great. You know, I always regret, because he got a chance to take over after Joel was relieved. And you know, we just underachieved for Kitch and on a really good team. I think we had 3 or 4 years in St. Louis that we were a 100-point team, and we just couldn't beat Detroit, and really had a good group of guys. I mean, you got guys like McInnes and Pronger and Kachuk, Demitra, myself, Scotty Young, Scotty Mellon. We had a good team, and we just couldn't get over the hump, and then kind of went south, and Kitch came in, and really we just didn't perform. So it's been his only chance to coach, and I've been down that road, so I feel bad for that. But what a great guy. He's had a great career. He's won some cups, and you know, it shows what you're all about when a guy like Joel is, you know, he needs Kitch. He wants him with him, and he's a good guy. So I wish him the best always.
Doug, I wish we had more time. I know you have a lot of other great stories we didn't get to, but thank you so much for your time here on Hockey Central. We got to get you back soon, and let's get you up for a broadcast at some point, too. It'd be great to have you in the studios once we get back to resuming life as normal, hopefully, in the next little while.
That'd be great, man. I'd love it. And whenever you guys need me, just give me a call. Perfect.
The studio's in Toronto, Doug, if you haven't heard.
Oh, I have heard, yeah. I have heard.
There is American.
All right, see you guys.